minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back. It's another hour of the Joe Elliott Show here on 84 WHAS. Switching gears and rolling back the clock in this hour, I want to talk about the way it was in Louisville some 30 to 35 years ago. You know, we talk about all the changes. We have the internet and we have cell phones and we have so many things. It was a very different landscape, not just in Louisville, but all over back in, say, 1970, 1975. Back in the days of three or four channels on your TV, you had to actually get up to change the channels. I've got a 9-year-old who just can't get over that. What, no remotes? No ESPN? He can only imagine what a deprived world we all lived in. But one of the things that we all did, most of us had a radio station or radio stations that we listened to all the time. We didn't have MP3s. We didn't have CD players in the cars. In fact, we were just starting to get tape machines and 8-tracks in the cars. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit tonight with a couple of folks. On the line with me is our good friend David Inman, the incredible Inman. You read his column in the CJ every day. You can read it online at CourierJournal.com. He's also in about 35 other newspapers around the country. Dave, how are you tonight?
Hey, Joe. Good.
I appreciate you being on the show. Sure. Also, I want to introduce you to John Quincy. John is the webmaster, creator, chief cook and bottle washer of 79WAKY.com and 1080WKLO.com. Now, for those of you who are longtime Louisvillians, you know these are magic call letters in Louisville, Kentucky, because they were the stations that so many people were cruising 4th Street and having some fun as they were listening to those stations. John, thanks very much for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. What a pleasure.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here. Dave, I know you have, in fact, you've got a book in the works about that time and about radio in those days. And I wonder if you could talk about why this issue had such appeal for you.
Well, I guess, you know, first of all, I'm a lifelong Louisvillian, so that puts me right there. I was also coming of age in the late 60s, early 70s, and so just really was in a pretty unique position to have those radio stations kind of dominate my life as they did the lives of a lot of teenagers living in Louisville at that time. It's just like you said, that was, if you were in the car, that was your music. You didn't have CDs or, you know, some maybe had clunky 8-track tape players, but not very many at that time. And you also, there was a community in listening to the same radio station, listening to the same music, keeping track of what songs were on the top 40. It was just kind of a communal experience and part of being a teenager at that time, really in a way that I can't even think of an equivalent today. We're so much more fragmented as a society, and even, you know, children and teenagers, everybody has their own interests, and there's nothing that kind of draws us together the way those radio stations did.
You know, somebody mentioned to me from a few years ago, say, Total Request Live with Carson Daly or something, and I don't even think that really approaches what it was, a much more universal kind of appeal that the stations had.
It's funny. It was universal, and it was also, you know, kind of uniquely local. I mean, you had your local DJs were characters that you knew about, and you knew of their quirks and their inside jokes and what they were going to talk about on the air. And so that was a whole part of the experience, too. So it was, you were listening to a lot of the same music that teenagers across the country were listening to, but it was also tinged with local likes and dislikes and local DJs. So it was a real combination of the two.
So did you have were you one of those kids who looked forward to meeting a DJ or TV personalities? And do you have a memory, Dave, where you had a chance to shake hands with one of these larger-than-life
figures? Yeah, well, actually, it was funny because when I was I went to high school across the river in Jeffersonville, and one day, I don't even know why they were doing it, Coyote Calhoun came to our school for an assembly. At that point, with WAKY, the evening guy from 6 to 10, if I remember right, and he would usher in, every time it was the top of the hour, he would kind of yell out at the top of his lungs, you know, 9 o'clock! And he would do that for us in the assembly at Jeff High School, and then you heard, like, you know, 600 teenage kids just scream with recognition at this guy who they listened to every night. And that was the closest I came to meeting an actual DJ like that until I was much older. But even that was pretty impressive.
They were really they were larger than life people, and as we say, at the time you had television stations, maybe three or four stations. There was an MTV, there was an ESPN.
Yeah.
Mom and Dad and the kids all sort of, you know, watched some of the same thing, but the music radio was a little different because while Mom and Dad sort of tolerated it in the car, it was your music. Right?
That's right. Yeah, and it was, and you know, I can remember being 16, and you know that feeling that you get when you have your driver's license and you're running any possible small errand for your family just so you can get out in the car, you know, go to the grocery store and get a bottle of milk. And the first thing you would do is, you know, you'd switch on your station, and it was just, you know, you in the privacy of your car and listening to it. And it wasn't something that your parents let you do, and it just added to the whole thrill and excitement of being able to do that.
Something magic about, you know, tooling down the highway with the radio up and singing, you know. And I mean, that's some, there's something special about being a, you know, being a teenage kid with the music. I mean, I'm sure that happens to some extent today, sure.
Yeah, but it's, you know, and also you're talking about cruising either, you know, 4th Street or the Frisch's Drive-In over in New Albany, or there were places like that in Jeffersonville where you would drive around and everybody else in every other car had the same station on you had on. And so with the windows rolled down, that was all kind of mixing in too, and just made you feel very much a part of that group of people in your community that was just and feeling special and feeling kind of distinctive.
Well, I know the first chapter of your upcoming book is on the 79 WAKY website where you write about those days, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And also I think it's fun to look at the Louisville radio scene before WAKY came on the air. We're talking at this point the late 1950s, and really radio in Louisville at that point is still kind of an extension of what radio was like in the 1930s and 40s in Louisville. A lot of you know, regularly scheduled musical shows, still some radio programming, some soap operas on the air. And radio was, of course, listened to a lot, but it was when Wacky went on the air, it was really a real sea change. And it was, of course, dramatized by their playing the pop song over and over for 24 hours. That, if I remember right, it's either Purple People Eater meets the Witch Doctor, or somebody meets something, but it was a novelty
song.
You're
right. Purple People Eater meets the Witch Doctor.
They
played it for 24 hours.
Yeah, and so to get the, you know, full gimmickry out of that, and to let people know that something different was coming on the air, and then, you know, and then Wacky came on, and there were stations like that in larger cities already, but that was the first time that rock and roll, you know, really hit Louisville square in the face, made a name for itself.
I think another thing, and I was just barely here. Okay, I mean, I was a little, I was a little guy.
Yeah.
But the when the Beatles came across the ocean in 1964, I mean,
right.
Rock and roll radio was just, I mean, every third song was a Beatles song. It was it was unbelievable, and people couldn't get enough.
Yeah, and that you know, by that point you had two major rock and roll stations in town. You had Wacky, but you also had WKLO. And for whatever reason, as the Beatles became more popular, the station in town that really started featuring them more prominently was WKLO. And Wacky was not featuring them quite as much. And WKLO really started, really for the first time, to gain seriously on WAKY and give it a real run for its money. Then WKLO brought on a British disc jockey, and his actual broadcasting training was pretty thin, but he had a great British voice. And so he, for him to be on, also just, you know, added to that whole craze for everything British and really helped the station become successful. And it was also just a great example of the kind of dog-eat-dog competition these stations went through and the gimmicks they kept trying to come up with to outdo each other.
And if I remember, John Quincy, Ken Douglas, who is the guy with the great British voice, was he selling clothes or something?
He was selling clothes at a store right across the street from the WKLO studios. And the program director heard his accent and said, you know, this would be kind of cool. The Beatles thing is going on. Let's get this guy in. And he happened to know a lot about the music scene in London and England, and talked about the fashions. And it was just a just a the guy being in the right place at the right time. And WKLO ran with him, and for at least a couple of years, he was a pretty big deal, Ken Douglas.
Apparently, at one point, he released an album about he had gone on with the Beatles on their tour. I believe it was in 1966, and he had released an album about that. And I've heard excerpts from the album, and of course, there are no actual Beatles songs on the album, but there are excerpts from press conferences and some kind of dramatic sounding, you know, covers of Beatles songs and Ken Douglas's narration, and it's all just very dramatic, and it sounds really, you know, cool, and it's just it went toward making him a huge hit.
The other thing, Dave, is there were this was a time when the radio stations really sort of drove the, you know, there were so many concerts and various things. WKLO did what was called a Toys for Tots drive every year, and they'd bring in some bands, and you'd bring your toy down to Freedom Hall, and they would pack the place every year, and Wacky would bring in big concerts, and that was they were sort of the focal point for all of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of community outreach in that way. You know, encouraging kids to volunteer. WKLO did a program in the late 60s that was designed to kind of spotlight, you know, the positive accomplishments of teenagers, because at that time there was so much coverage of riots and those kinds of things that they wanted, you know, to feature some kids doing more positive things. And so there was a real obligation, really, to help the community out. Of course, it's still a radio station. It's a business, you know, but they were doing things and kind of going out of their way to kind of help the community as well.
It was larger than life, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
When did this thing sort of end, Dave? When did the
Well, you mentioned 75,
right.
And I think that really it's so funny because it's also the year I graduated from high school, and I can remember at that point, even a little bit before then, this awareness that, you know, there was FM. And in those days, FM was much different than a lot of FM stations are today. It was album rock. And so you heard a, you know, 7-minute Led Zeppelin song, or you heard 3 or 4 songs in a row without as many commercials. And also, if you had FM in your car, as more and more, you know, cars did at that point, the sound quality was better. And so, and this was happening all over America at this point, but FM was really starting to capture that teenage audience, and it offered something different, and it was it really started to mean the end of you know, AM radio, at least as it had been kind of exemplified by WAKY and KLO.
AM is certainly alive and well on stations across the country, on some stations like this one, but it's
absolutely
a very different time as opposed to the days when, and of course now, and this is really inside baseball, but in as people were growing up in the 60s, 70s, and even into the 80s, I think so many kids had a radio station. If you ask a group of 14-year-olds now, some of them may have a radio station that they're really excited about, but most of them don't. They don't, or they don't know all the DJs, that kind of thing. They have an iPod, they have, you know, MP3s.
Right.
It's very different, and they don't all listen to the same music. They might listen to different music than their friends listen to.
There's so much. I mean, it's just the choices are staggering, and it's really hard for me to keep up with them because it's call letters change so frequently, and formats change, and personalities change, and there's not a consistency that there was, at least it seemed to me when I was listening to it.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate you giving us some time here, and I look forward to seeing you in here in just a few weeks. We'll come back and do a little TV and movie stuff.
Sounds good, Joe.
Dave, thanks very much.
Take care.
The incredible Inman, who you read every day in the Courier Journal at CourierJournal.com. You can actually buy a paper if you wanted to. And he's also in about 35 other papers across the country. A good man. And we'll have him back here to talk a little TV and movie trivia as the summer rolls on here. We'll take a quick break, come back, and talk with John Quincy. He is the curator, designer, chief cook and bottle washer of 79WAKY.com and 1080WKLO.com. And I get a rush saying those call letters. We'll come back after this. It's the Joe Elliott Show on 84WHAS.